Hey, and welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am your fill-in host, Barnabas Piper, here, as always, with my co-host and partner in radio, Ronnie Martin, while Ted is visiting family this week, so he is out, and so we're taking it without him. And so my apologies in advance for my unprofessional transitions and my general lack of skill at hosting. He's the man. I'm just his backup, and hopefully I can get us to the finish line.
Pipe, you're going to do great. Let me give you some encouragement right off the bat. Okay. So my wife just recently listened to something you hosted with, I think it was Russell Moore and Beth Moore at your church. And she just was going on, rather annoyingly on and on about how well you did and what a great host you were. I know this is not the same thing. I know it's not a one-to-one, but,
So what you're saying is you're not Beth Moore.
Well, I'm not Beth Moore or Russell Moore.
Okay.
And but you're still Barnabas Piper, so let's just see what you can what kind of magic trick you can pull out of your hat for this one.
Yeah. We'll see what I can do. And oddly enough, what we're going to do on this episode is very similar to what I had the chance to do then, which is field questions from listeners for a podcast thing and then throw it to somebody else to talk about. So that's how this is nice. Going to go today.
I mean, that's really what hosting is, right?
I mean, yes, exactly. Yeah. I don't have to have any opinions. I just need to move to the next thing. but before we get into that, let me highlight a couple of our sponsors. So this is going to come as a surprise to you. Our first sponsor today is you, because you have released some brand new Christmas music, or are releasing some brand new Christmas music, depending on, you know, when this all releases. And I think you should tell listeners about it and where they can get it.
Well, I appreciate that, Pipe. It's actually not Christmas music. It's just being released around Christmas time.
Oh, I saw the artwork and it was very wintry and felt festive. So I assumed Christmas music. Also,
yeah, well,
you being the deep and abiding lover of Christmas just seemed logical.
Well, it's it does look like Christmas. It's not actually a Christmas song, but it's kind of winter themed.
Okay.
So after so many years, I recorded my first solo album, and so that's coming out in January. And we had a couple singles drop. The first one a couple weeks ago. The next one, which is a song called "Snow Like Wool," which kind of has a wintry Christmas theme. It's even though it's not really a hard Christmas song, that comes out on December 3rd. And you can go to velvetbluemusic.com and order a bunch of goodies that comes with the single. So the single is actually an actual product. You can also get it digitally, but we're releasing it CD format, and we have posters and trading cards and stickers and all
Who
kinds of stuff.
Who did the artwork
to come
for that? Because it's really good.
Yeah, so it's actually a guy that I've been working with for years named Nathan Schrader, who did the artwork on that Advent book I did for kids a couple years ago, The Best Gift Ever Given, which, by the way, you can also – there's probably still a few days to get that before the season. So I'm in promo overload right now. But the music stuff I'm really excited about, and it's been a long time coming. And so full-length album – dropping in January. That'll be on all formats. So that'll be vinyl, CD, cassette, and
really?
All kinds
doing
of
cassettes.
Doing cassettes too.
Love it.
Cassettes have kind of made a comeback, you know, and kind of in hit, sort of, you know, with the hipsters. And we're able to do it on all the formats, and it's really exciting. The first single dropped a couple weeks ago, and the reception was really good and way more than what we were anticipating and expecting. And so, it's good times. And again, velvetbluemusic.com. You can get everything there.
Awesome. We'll link to that in show notes and everything too, listeners. So, and speaking of show notes, you can find those at our brand new website. It is thehappyrant.com. I think I've just utterly butchered that in previous episodes and basically been like, I don't know, Google it. So it is thehappyrant.com. That is where our show will be hosted. It's also where all of our new merchandise is. So we're working with Josh Byers, who runs Visual Theology, who's been a partner of ours for several months. He does all the designs on those, and then the company we work with to get those shirts made and everything does really high quality stuff. So we have a bunch of new t-shirts. There's one of those canvas tote bags. There's a fanny pack. There's also some new merchandise that'll be dropping soon. Some different designs, different products, really high quality, and probably through about the end of the year, we'll be offering free shipping on everything. So. What's the price you see there is the price you pay, free shipping. So again, go to thehappyrant.com, check out our merchandise. It is the season to be giving gift ideas to people. So listeners, you probably have friends and family who have no idea why you like this show, but that doesn't matter. You send them that link and say, hey, I want this shirt for Christmas. They take care of it. They get free shipping. You get awesome merchandise and everybody wins. So be sure to check that out. And that's just where you can go to get information about the show, future live events. As we find details on those, the next one will be in April. That will all be at thehappyrant.com. So we need to move into our topics for the day. These were all listener submitted via Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram. Just find us there. So these are kind of all over the map. But the first one is something that we had kind of texted about, and there was multiple listeners who submitted questions about this very thing. And it's basically Taylor Swift. Why is she a thing? And I know that neither you nor I keep up with Taylor Swift's music very well, but you had some thoughts on Taylor Swift, the phenomenon, or rather the phenomenon of middle-aged men and their interactions with Taylor Swift. So fill this in for me. Taylor Swift as a phenomenon amongst middle-aged men, what's the deal?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's a great question. I'm just kind of going off of some of the action that I've seen on Twitter. I can probably recall one or two of Taylor's like big hits. I'm not a fan. I don't have anything against Taylor. It's just, she's never drawn my interest. If I probably weeded through her albums, I'd probably hear some great material, some great catchy pop songs, which I'm a huge fan of big catchy pop songs. So this has nothing to do with me trying to go to the contrarian side and say, oh, it's ridiculous. No, she's a great artist. She's a good songwriter, a lot of talent there, all that good stuff. I think what's kind of weird for me is, if people want to embrace liking or loving or being a fan of something, or in our case here, specifically an artist, I'm of the mindset that you just do it, and you don't try to do it ironically. And you don't try to do it as a way to get like laughs or a way to get winks and nods. And so what I've seen on Twitter specifically, especially kind of nerd theology Twitter, it seems like. So maybe there's some tie in there we can kind of chat about. But just sort of this like wink nod, like, oh, the new Taylor Swift album dropped. I'm going to be standing in line, you know, all night at Best Buy waiting to get the CD. This would have been like 10 years ago, you know, or 15 years ago. But it's that sort of mentality.
I don't know, nerd theology Twitter might actually think you still have to do that to get
they it. Still might. Yeah, you still might have to do that, right? So I think so. There's just this vibe where you get these guys and they say that. And they say, you know, and I'm going to be filming myself, like, you know, singing along, you know, in the car on the way to, you know, whatever, my prof gig at a seminary, you know, on Monday. And they're looking for somebody to give them a reaction. Like, you're kidding. You mean you like Taylor Swift? You know, and it's like, it's that kind of vibe that just I don't understand. Because again, I mean, when you're an artist as big as Taylor Swift, like it, everybody loves her. It's not like something where it's like, hey, I'm 67 years old. It's weird that no, she has a ton of seniors. I mean, she covers all the age groups and the demographics. I mean, she wouldn't be as global of a superstar as she was if she didn't. She's an America's sweetheart, kind of household name musical artist. So everybody loves her. So this whole thing about theology, Christian nerd Twitter trying to wink nod themselves through Taylor Swift's new release, I just kind of go, huh, okay. I mean, just say you can't wait for the record and you're stoked.
Because I feel like that's, you know, to use Ted's phrase, this is persona work. This is somebody who lives in tweed and khaki, attempting to look like something else or give off like, hey, I've got a fun, lighthearted, whimsical vibe or something. What is the persona they're going for?
I mean, that's the question, man. I have no idea other than, you know, this is what it might be, Pipe. I don't know. Let me get your take on this too. What it could be is that these guys that are so that have these sort of careers or these vocations that are so intensely serious. I don't know if it's their way of saying, hey, I like things that are light and frivolous and don't have to be, you know, so heavy and don't have to have all this existential meaning to them. I can like Twinkies. I can like a good burger. I can like Taylor Swift and, you know, don't at me. You know, it's like that kind of a vibe. Man, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, what a weird... So this gives me... I have two thoughts here. First of all, is that what a weird world, and I think social media has kind of crystallized this, is that people see others only in their public persona. So if somebody is a, you know, I don't know, academic theologian type, that's all that exists. So they can't be a family man, they can't be a sports fan, they can't be a music fan, they can't enjoy, you know, White Castle or whatever. Yeah. They're only this one thing. And so they have to kind of publicly display a different persona to counterbalance that. The second thing, and this is more of a theory, is Taylor Swift just like, you know, we've talked about trying to get the retweets or the replies from Beth Moore. Is Taylor Swift like just the Beth Moore of music? Like, it's people kind of putting themselves in that sphere to be like, hey, look, I'm kind of a nice guy. Like, I'm not a total jerk, or I'm kind of fun. Is she just the Beth Moore of pop music for this?
I mean, I think, I don't know that you could have said that better, Pipe. That's really astute. That's a great comparison, I would say. I mean, I think it's just Taylor Swift. See, the thing is, you start to get into subjectivity, you know, you start to get into subjectivity wars whenever you talk about movies, music, art, film, you know, all those types of things. But Taylor is like one of these things where it's like, she's like the Big Mac of music. It's like, I don't eat a Big Mac every day. Not everybody loves Big Macs, but in a general sense, there's a reason why it says on McDonald's, like, signage, you know, we sell 50 billion burgers a day or whatever it is, right? The fact is that everybody enjoys a Big Mac. Everybody will eat a Big Mac. And I think Taylor Swift sort of carries that with her in terms of, you know, being a populist, you know, commercial artist. And it's like, and you know, sometimes we just like to go, hey man, you know, I don't mind that. I like that. I like things that are a little cheesy. I like things that are a little commercial. I can lower my guard. I can lighten up a little bit. And I think it's just, it's almost like a reactionary thing, in the same way that, I mean, seriously, Pipe, if I just went on social right now and I just said, dude, for the last 6 weeks, I've been going through that last Beth Moore, like, Bible study, and I'm stoked. Like, I would do that because I would want to get people adding me. You know what I mean? And again, there's nothing wrong. I mean, the Bible study is probably great. It's not anything against that. It's just the expectation that people would have of me would probably not be that I would be going through a Beth Moore study. And I think that's kind of what it is, like what you just said with Swift.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating that, so Beth Moore, Taylor Swift, both, you know, hugely popular in their field. Obviously, Taylor Swift is kind of hugely popular in everybody's field. Both of them are very good at what they do, which means the contrarian people, particularly the sexist ones, really don't like them. But then people also want to use their success as like my posturing. So it's like, it's a little bit like saying, I occasionally eat McDonald's. Like, what do you want? A high five? Congratulations? They're everywhere. They're at every interstate exit. Like, what? Good? I don't know. I don't know what to tell people. I find it fascinating, and apparently listeners do too. All right. So keeping in the realm of the audio world, another listener, their entire question was just this: sound guys.
Oh, dude.
So I don't. Okay. I feel like there are stories to tell here, especially because you have been in an audio world as a musician and you've done some production, and then now as a preacher, you have dealt with a lot of sound guys.
Oh my gosh, so yes.
Let's discuss sound guy persona, sound guy contrarianism. The stereotypical sound guy is very protective. Don't touch this. Treats this as if he's, you know, painting the Sistine Chapel, while he's pushing buttons, and so forth. So expound upon sound guys. What are your experiences? What have you observed about their contrarian personas? What are some of the best experiences you've had? You know, there's got to be some great ones out there. Ready, go.
Yeah, dude. I mean, the sound guy thing is so fascinating because it's like what it is. It's typically, I mean, if we want to break it down a little bit deeper, if we want to go a little more theological on it, right? It's almost like you're talking about control, right? So you're talking about men and women who are behind this board, and at the end of the day, and you know, whether anybody likes to admit it or not, they hold the keys, right? The whole thing.
They like to admit it loudly.
Well, that is one of the things they like to admit. That's actually true. But they hold the keys, right? So the whole thing rises and falls on them. They have this beautiful thing called a mute button. And if they wanted to, and if they wanted to probably lose their job, they could just mute anybody whenever they want. They can pull the volume down. They get to decide how everything sounds. And so I think this is what's strange, man. So it feels like that whole realm, that whole audiovisual realm, it seems to draw people in that have that very high level of I need to control my environment kind of personality type. And so that's why you just get these people that just seem to be overly cranky a little bit, almost like, I mean, to stereotype it a little bit, they all seem a little bit cranky. But here's the thing that nobody ever gives credit to when it comes to sound guys, is that they may just seem cranky, like they're just generally cranky guys. But the fact is that they're working with artists exclusively, who are the worst people in the world to work with.
Yeah.
Pastors and artists. And so it's like, so when you think about it, whether it's like a sound guy at a club or a sound guy at a church or whatever it is, they're working with people that are just highly emotional and opinionated and just literally almost like existing in the depths of the world, you know, in their heart and in their mind. And so these guys have to somehow take all of that and they have to make something happen in the midst of all of this existential angst that's coming at them from pastors and artists. And so on that level, they have a lot to deal with. But they also seem like people that love to be in a place where they're the go-to and they get to control everything. So it's this weird kind of thing. My favorite sound guys, honestly, are guys that these are the guys I like the best. They're the guys that you say, hey, man, would you think about joining the sound team? And they're like, I've never listened to a song once in my life. Like I don't even know what sound is. What is this word you're talking about? And then so I like the guys that you train and they never even saw themselves as a sound person. And so they don't carry any of that sort of control freakish kind of vibe with them into the sound booth every week. Those are the guys that to me are the most fun guys to work with because they stay kind of humble. The guys that were like born engineers. You know, they woke up as they were birthed as Enneagram fives and they're just like, man, the first thing I want to do is read manuals. You know, I got this manual for this soundboard on my nightstand. It's 901 pages and I'm just going to read it every night until I learn this thing. Those are the guys where you go, dude, you got it. Like you just got to relax, man. You got to take this less serious.
I kind of discovered the sound guy thing early, you know, so,
yeah.
I did youth ministry when I was in college and just out of college. And so we had, you know, we had a two speaker set up in our youth room. It was not, you know, it wasn't like a big mega church kind of whole, you know, stage setup, but just two speakers and then a soundboard that had like, probably like, eight different tracks, you know, so you could plug in like a keyboard, a couple vocals, you know, guitar or two, and like, and then
just,
you
know, super simple is what
play a CD on it of, you know, DC Talk or something. And there was a volunteer guy. So he'd recently graduated from high school, but was still in the area kind of doing the gap year thing, which, at that point it wasn't a gap year. It was just an aimless teenager. And he would come in and like yell at me and like I ran the show. He'd come in and be like, you do not touch the soundboard. This is like, he basically like hugged it the way like a starving homeless man does a plate of food kind of thing. And I was like, oh, this is a real thing. And his dad ran sound for the church as a whole, similar vibe. And so then I discovered, oh, this is a thing. And then I would, as I worked at different churches and things, there would be like conversations that happened on the side of how do we get the sound guys to change something? We don't like this setting. We don't like the way this is. How do we get them to change it? And then it was like, it was like figuring out how to negotiate a Cold War situation. How do we negotiate so they don't drop an audio atomic bomb on us kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then.
Yeah.
was gonna say, then I got to Emmanuel where I am now, and I just kind of assumed the sound guys are like that. I thought all sound guys are like that. Come to find out that's not true. Some of them live to serve, and they are here to, how do we make this the best experience for everybody? How do we make it the best quality? They give input and then they take input. It's this amazing thing called, you know, an exchange of ideas. They it's also are used to working
Christianity
with, pipe. Yeah. A little bit of humility, a little bit of grace. Even sound guys have it. So it's been a revelation to me. But yeah, the protective, obsessive sound guy thing is always amusing to me. It never ceases to make me laugh.
I had such a bad experience a couple of decades ago with the sound thing, because I was thrust into a ministry where I had a team of about 8 sound guys that I had to manage. And it was such a harrowing experience that I'm not kidding, man. And I, at that point, I mean, I'd had a lot of music industry experience and, you know, working all those edges and corners.
That just means they disliked you more.
Pretty much. I mean, there was a lot to that, because the problem was that even as a musician and as a worship leader, I knew a little something about sound. And so that made it even worse when I would tell them to like adjust an EQ setting, and they're looking at me. I'm like, yeah, I'm telling you what I want you to do because I know what I want you to do, you know? And it was just such a horrible experience. And it was a big church setting too. So it was that vibe where people were allowed to be cranky and unkind. And somehow, I mean, it was all done in the name of excellence. So somehow that made it okay. Right. And so I remember like decades later when I'm church planting and I'm in smaller churches, I just do this thing now where I get with sound guys and I just go, hey, you guys, this whole thing isn't going to turn into that, like, ever. Like, you can make mistakes. Nobody has ultimate power or control, including me. Man, we work together. We make this like a joyous occasion. This is not about making everything perfect. This is just about serving one another. So let's just, if there's any of that weirdo control freak, like, this is my space, I own this, don't touch it. I said, you just have to lose that or it's not going to work, because that's not the vibe. And so, man, I would say at our church in the last decade, it's been awesome, man. We have these dudes, just what you described at Emmanuel. I mean, these guys are the opposite of that. They all work together. Nobody takes, you know, crazy ownership. I mean, everybody's just happy to be there and do everything they can to make things sound good. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, in general, taking ownership in ministry and volunteering positions should only apply to your own responsibilities. Like, I own the responsibility. Right. Everything else you hold very open-handed. That's also true for pastors. Like, that's just across the
board. 100%. Yeah, man.
All right, next topic. And this is a. I feel like you will have really good insights on this. And the question is simply this: why is everybody becoming Anglican? That was the submitted question. And
so we were going to do an ep a little while ago called Going Anglican, and I think we thought the tone was off with it, and so we held off on it, I think, is what happened.
And we didn't want to make fun of the Anglicans too much, you know, smells and bells and all that stuff. But
right. Because we all have friends that are, and I don't want to, you know, I love them and I respect them. So
right, but it does feel like, you know, with the contentious everything happening in the PCA and the Southern Baptist Convention, and I think, you know, the E-Free Church maybe has, I don't know, do you guys have stuff going on, or are you guys pretty chill?
Nah, we never have anything going on.
Okay. You're just very, everybody's free and easy. That's great. Like, everybody, the Christian Reformed Church is a hot mess right now. Everybody's angry at everybody, and except the Anglicans, it seems like. And so, like, Beth Moore recently tweeted about the kind of revelation experience of going into a smaller, she just called it a liturgical church, but let's just call it Anglican for
Yeah, I think so. Giggles. I think that's accurate. Yeah.
Ray Ortland and Sam Alberry, who are actually, they're at Emmanuel, but they have both recently been named canon theologians for the Anglican Church.
Which I'm still super confused about, but go on.
Yeah, I think it basically means like they check all the Anglican boxes, but they haven't been ordained into the Anglican Church. So basically, like, they are like acceptable theologians and they kind of serve as part of it, but they're not Anglican.
Got it.
I don't know if that made any, I don't know if that helped at all. It just was a bunch of words.
I don't know. I believe every word you said.
Yeah. So, and then of course there's the longstanding trend of, younger Christians moving toward liturgical denominations in the United States. That's pretty much the Anglican Church at this point, because the other ones are kind of struggling. So in terms of healthy denominations, or at least Orthodox ones, that yeah. seems to be the Anglican Church. So why Anglican? Like, what's the draw? And you know, and when is their day coming? I guess is the
second. Dude, I know, question. And that's always the question for me. I don't know. You know, I don't. I have to admit that I don't know enough about all the ins and outs of the Anglican Church. I do know some people that have done what we call going Anglican, which seems to be a bit of a trend, which is I'm in a church. It's just sort of your vanilla evangelical Christian church. And I'm in this particular, it's not necessarily a bad church, but it's lacking some of the depth that I long for. And when I look into other traditions, such as the Anglican Church, there is there's just more of a emphasis on, you know, things like beauty and history and tradition and things that haven't changed so much with the time. So you're looking at like a church tradition that doesn't become altered by culture. And I think they, for a certain kind of person, that's really that's really enticing for them. And I understand that. I mean, what I always think is, and again, there's good reasons for people leaving churches and going to other traditions. So this has nothing to do with that, of course, like a Beth Moore or whoever. But I always kind of back up and go, well, hold on, like what you just said, Pipe, like the knee jerk is going to go both ways, right? So, like, are we just part of a generation that's knee jerking out of our bland, vanilla, you know, kind of hypey, evangelical, very cliched, you know, we just want everything to be entertainment kind of driven churches to something that has more tradition, more depth. But then at one point, like the next generation is going to go, oh, but this is like dead orthodoxy and these traditions aren't, these are all about, this has, you know, where's the evangelism and where is us kind of going out and, you know, reaching into the culture and, you know, so we need to do that. And then you'll see that the trend just knee jerk back to what the previous generation was trying to knee jerk out of. So I'm always wondering, like, well, okay, like, should we just slow down before we make decisions?
I mean, my recollection is that the Anglican Church started as a knee jerk reaction because, and my history could be way off on this, so don't correct me. I don't care. One of the kings of England, I think Henry VIII, wanted to get a divorce and he needed the Pope's approval. You know, and it was probably like his third or fifth wife or something. And since he couldn't get the approval, he's like, fine, we're doing our own thing. And he just separated the Church of England from the Catholic Church. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's kind of generally the case. So the Anglican Church started with a fine, I'm going to take my ball and go home. And then people have been leaving the Anglican Church over the years because it became sort of hot, heavy-handed and, you know, greedy bishops and all this stuff. But in recent years, you know, the pendulum has kind of swung back towards they have their roots in what seemed like the right place. You know, their foundations are on the stuff that really matters, not a lot of the contentious denominational stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope their day never comes. I would love it if a denomination stayed healthy for like 8 centuries straight. That'd be incredible.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't actually, not even a little bit.
It's not right. We're living in an era where it's hard not to be cynical about those kind of things, right?
Yeah, but I do think so. So you go back, if you go back to like Carl Henry and J.I. Packer and Billy Graham, some of these guys who were kind of core evangelicals in the middle of the 20th century. When I say evangelicals, I mean like the original definition where people are, it's the word of God, it's salvation, it's evangelism. Like we are, that's what we're built around.
Yeah,
the Anglican Church has kind of maintained those core things. It's built on the Word of God. It's built on worship. It's built on being on mission where you are, you know, in terms of taking the light of Christ into the world, on personal holiness and, you know, walking with the Lord. And then it does seem like because of the liturgy, there's more unity among the people. So it's not just sort of the individualistic Christianity. So I think there's a lot of appealing stuff about that. I also think for young people who are bored with, you know, flashy worship, 7 words sung 11 times on repeat by a dude in skinny jeans and Jordans, it it has a strong, like, oh, this is this, there's some gravity here. There's different substance here. So I think that's a real thing too.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's like, you know, it's like kids listening to Taylor Swift, and then at some point they discover like late period Beatles records, you know, and they go, okay, so I don't know that I've really been listening to music. And then I discovered this and my eyes have been opened and I want to get back to the roots. I want to get back to when music was made for the sake of art and not just commercial viability. You know, it's like that. It's that same kind of a thing. And there's like, that's good, right? Because you're opening your eyes to things that do have a richness and a tradition, and they're probably more deeply anchored and they stay that way. So in a world that is constantly in flux, there you have this one piece of your world that remains unchanged. I think there's a legitimacy to that and a value to that. So certainly it's not anything that we're certainly not making fun of it as much as we're just saying it's curious,
yeah.
You know, that well, tradition in particular.
And I would offer one caution. I mean, there's probably lots of cautions, but one particularly, and your Taylor Swift Beatles example brought this to mind. Now, I also feel like you're trying to target me because I can't stand the Beatles, but I understand your point. When you leave something behind and move on to something else, the instinctive reaction is to crap on the thing you just left behind. You know, correct. So you're like, oh, I've graduated from that. I don't do that anymore. That right. silliness. Right. You're like, you just gave 8 years of your life to having a great time with this. Maybe you can hold on to that and go, man, it was a blast. And now this is the right thing for me. And you don't have to. So I think the risk of the younger Christians moving into Anglicanism or any sort of high church is to basically poo-poo what they came out of, not realizing that's your roots. There's probably a lot of good experiences in it. Some of you got burned badly. Some of you have way overplayed the hand of being burned. You didn't get burned. You got bored. Those are two different things.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, yeah, don't like – there doesn't need to be sort of the combativeness of I found the true church. Because at some point you're going to get frustrated where you are. Every church has its warts. Like stick around for a minute. You'll get frustrated. So that doesn't mean leave. It just means reality sets in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just like, I think whenever we make decisions that are, you know, I think what wisdom does and what spiritual maturity does for us is it just allows us to pause and to ponder a little bit more. It could be that we need to make a decision like that. And it could be that we're in an environment or denomination that is just, it isn't something that is, you know, good for our soul in, you know, maybe a variety of ways. But again, you know, I think graciousness allows us to move to something new or a new tradition and also look back and just sort of recount, you know, the value of what we left and the ways that God used that in our lives. And I just think wisdom allows us to do that. We don't have to hate one thing to embrace a new thing. And we just have to learn how to be better at that.
The most countercultural thing that we've said on this podcast for 7 years.
And luckily we have Twitter Pipe, which is really good at that and helps us all not do that.
Yeah, so it's super balanced, great at nuance, very open-handed.
100%.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for Twitter for that reason. All right, I think we should conclude this podcast with a handful of quick hitters. So these are ones that I don't think they're worthy of a conversation, but they're worthy of an opinion. So I'm just going to run through them, and we'll just chat about them briefly.
Yeah,
so the first one is soup versus stew. A, what's the difference? And B, you know, what do you choose out of those two? Soup versus stew.
Oh man. I go for a stew. I'll tell you why, man, because I like things. I like to be able to chew on stuff. So I like the other day, Big M made this soup, and by the end of it, she'd put so much stuff in this thing that she was like, I don't even know if I can call it a soup. And I'm like, babe, it's cool. Like whatever we call it or don't call it, I'm just telling you right now, I love it because there's so much stuff in it. And so like a plain tomato soup, which is great. I just find myself throwing like two bags of crackers in that thing and
enough cheese that just coats the bottom of the bowl. Yeah.
Like literally like so much cheese that I'm just eating a bowl of cheese because I like a little texture. That's just me. I love texture. I love things to chew and all of that. So I'm going to go with a stew or a stew like soup every time.
Yeah, I think that I don't know what the technical difference is, but I think it's what you just said. It's like large chunks of edible food in there versus, you know, more of a broth based thing. And the other is a little bit more gravy versus broth based. There's a difference. I'm with you. My main reason is I like to be full when I'm done eating, and soup is like being on a juice cleanse. So it's, you know, it needs to have enough substance that I walk away going, that was satisfactory.
Or pipe, you just eat so much bread with it that you defeated the whole point of it anyway. So
I know,
it just
like,
doesn't matter.
Oh, I know. Like, we used to do catered lunches at jobs at a previous thing. They're like, it's going to be a soup and salad lunch. And I'm like, I'm going to die. Like, neither of these are substance. These are both like, these are side dishes and decorations. This is terrible.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you drink tomato soup, you typically have a grilled cheese sandwich to accompany it for a reason.
Yes. Right? Yeah. And the reason is food, getting full. Okay. Next one on the quick hitter. Are you a drive-through guy or a park and go inside guy?
Oh, dude, that is a great, great question. I used to be a drive-through guy years ago. I'm not anymore. I sort of like going through the motions of stopping, going in, and making more of a thing out of it. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to eat in, but I hate sitting in a drive-through. So I would rather just kind of go in and stretch my legs and, just get out of the car. I'm always thinking of it in terms of like a longer trip.
Yes.
But that doesn't have to apply either. But yeah, I typically in my old age now, I kind of like to get out.
I hear you. See, I'm still a drive-through guy, but only because I haven't learned my lesson yet.
That's good.
The drive-through experience has a ceiling of that was fine and a floor of I want to commit mass murder. So there's... the best you can get out of a drive-through is efficiency, and I guess that's what you're going for, but then that's pretty rare. Like, unless you're at Chick-fil-A, you can't guarantee that. So I really ought to learn to just go inside. You also get the benefit of the stretching of the legs. There's an opportunity to restroom if it's a road trip, that kind of thing. So I am a drive-through guy, but only because I'm stubborn and insist that the experience might be better this next time than it has been the last 312 times.
But I'm with you, Pipe. I mean, I still do drive-thrus too. I think this is what I do though too. Like sometimes that drive-thru is like 41 miles long and you like look in like the whatever, like the lobby, and there's like one person in line. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna go in and it's gonna be quicker, you know?
And then you get in there and realize that all of the employees are dedicated to drive-thru and they have like the one lady twirling her hair at the counter who's like, I'm sorry, what do you want? And they forget order and they get it wrong.
Yeah, so like the person the person you would have been behind, you see them go through the drive-thru and get their food before. Like, it would have been quicker in the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, last quick hitter. At least I think this is going to be quick. I know this is dear to your heart.
Oh, boy.
One holiday food that needs to go and one holiday food that you must have. Like one throwaway, one this is a must. And holiday could be Thanksgiving, could be Christmas, could be seasonal, just like with this time of year. Ready to go.
All right, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I think we have some agreement with this, Pipe. If I never eat another turkey again, I'm totally good.
Yes.
I would love to replace turkey with – I'm okay with having all the sides with it, but I'm always like, can we just – let's do a different meat. I'd be great with that. But I live with a Thanksgiving traditionalist who says this is the one meal a year that I want it to be exactly the same, and so that's what we roll with, and that's fine too.
There's value in that. The value is not in the food, however. So
For sure, 100%. So I don't love that. Like it's not something. It's just not something it's not something I crave. But I eat it, and I'm okay, and it's great, and I'm happy, you know. But if you gave me my choice, I'd be like, well, can we swap that out for something? I'm all for. I'm good with that, you know. Now something that I can't, that I have to have. Oh my gosh, man! You know how bad I am on the spot with these things, Pipe. Why don't you talk, man? What do you got?
Okay, so I'll go with you on the food that has to go. We're at the time of this recording, Thanksgiving is tomorrow. So
yes,
I'm going to go traditional Thanksgiving food that has to go. At least it's traditional in some households. It is the sweet potato casserole with marshmallows on top.
Oh, dude.
Has to go.
Interesting.
See,
I've
one with a
it.
Great like pecan brown sugar crumble crust on top. That I'm here for. So it's not the sweet potatoes, it's the marshmallows. I feel like the marshmallows are basically trying to get kids to eat a thing that they don't want to eat. And so, but it's really just like, it's okay. it's like the pixie sticks of Thanksgiving food. You're like, this is just kind of over the top gross.
Well, dude, is that like so I've never had that because I did not grow up with a mother that made it. What's that?
Say, because your parents loved you, apparently.
Well, dude, I don't know. I mean, they made a lot of horrible things, but like Big M, that would be, I mean, I hate saying this, that would like be beneath her to put marshmallows on her sweet potato. She would never do that in 958,000 years.
That's because God brought you a wonderful woman with good taste.
Well, that is true. So, that's 100%. But yeah,
it might be a solidly Midwestern thing. I don't know who does it, but like it was on our table every year growing up, and I always tried to like it. And what I ended up doing was just eating the marshmallows because like I was a kid. I'm like, well, I like marshmallows. And then as an adult, I discovered you can put stuff on top that's like brown sugar, butter, pecans, and like it's this wonderful. It's so good.
I've had some of that, and it's kind of desserty, I think. Yeah. So I had to acquire taste for that pipe. So growing up, I always skipped the sweet potatoes because I didn't like them, and I think it was a texture thing, it just wasn't kid enough. You know, it wasn't kid oriented enough. But like later in life, I mean, dude, it's delicious. There's no doubt about it. You know.
Yeah, so that's my one that has to go is the marshmallow. The one that is a must, and it's kind of a category. It is the apple pie, apple crisp family of foods. And as far as I'm concerned, that can start right around, you know, October and take me right on through Christmas. Apple pie is, I mean, I'll eat it any time of year, but in terms of seasonal, like it is the quintessential fall, winter, festive, homey, delicious food. And I don't care if it's a pie or an apple crisp, I'm good with either. I love both.
I love both those two, a pipe. I love those so much. And I love my main thing. It's kind of a random one, but I am just gaga for caramel apples with peanuts on them. I can eat them
with
all day.
Peanuts. That's
never
very
get tired
specific.
Of them. I love it. It's chewy. I love it when the caramel's so hard that I feel like my teeth are going to break, and it takes me about an hour to chew every bite. Like I love it so much. I can't stand it. I would eat like four of those things a day, every day, never get sick of them. That's how much I love it. I don't know what the deal is.
I mean, I'm an efficient caramel apple eater. So I'm like, slice up the apple and give me caramel dip. Cause then I can get through more of them faster and I can shovel caramel.
I understand.
And the ratio of every bite is exactly what you want. You don't like get into the middle of the apple and go, oh, there's no caramel in here. So
that's the problem. That's why you got to dip those things to the point where they're completely immersed.
Yeah.
And there is not one part of them that isn't covered. Yeah. I mean, I have it down to a science, but that would be it for me, man. That is a dessert for me that it's not really dessert because it's not like I eat them out. I just eat them during the day. And if I make them, I just keep eating them all. I'm literally eating them all. I shouldn't even be admitting this. I'm just eating them all day. It's like pure gluttony. It's caramel apple gluttony.
Dentist is so happy to hear this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, if I ever visit, I mean, you know, I haven't seen him for a couple of decades. But, yeah, he'd be like, oh, dude, it's been a rough run for you with the caramel apples, hasn't it, Big R? And I'd be like, as a matter of fact, it has.
They're like, not rough. It's been wonderful.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think we should probably land this plane now. But before we do, listeners, let me tell you about our last sponsor, and it is the Dwell Bible app. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can check out their site, check out their features. You can also see the discounts they offer for our listeners. One thing to highlight that Dwell is rolling out in early 2022, so January of 2022, is a full reading feature to go along with their listening feature. So they've had a read along thing, and that kind of functions like karaoke lyrics, where like the words scroll as you listen. They're just rolling out a full reading app with all the Bible versions, all the highlighting features, saving features, similar to what you would use in like a, you know, any other Bible reading app. And so you can basically have all of your Bible reading and listening experience in one place instead of having to switch back and forth. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can see the discounts. And then at the top is a little thing that says blog. They have a whole blog post laying out the features. It looks really nice. So again, check out Dwell. They have a 33% discount for our listeners off of their lifetime subscription, 10% off of an annual subscription. And then you can also give these as gifts. So if you've already gotten it and you love it, we had one listener who said, I wasn't sold on it, so I bought it for my brother-in-law. And he ended up liking it enough that I ended up buying it. So it was sort of a, nice. It was like a test run on the in-laws. And I'm like, fine, great. Yes. Test this out on other people who you like less, and then you'll discover that it's worth buying. So
always the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're not sure you like something, give it to somebody you're not sure you like, and it'll all come back around in the end. So again, listeners, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, check out their features, check out this, the full listening and reading experience, and get those discounts. Thanks so much for listening with us today. And I can't do it like Ted does. I don't have his resonance, but I'm going to give it a shot here.
It's okay.
Until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
This is Perseus Poku, host of the Sound Reasoning Ministry podcast. Learn how to share and defend your faith by listening to us weekly. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.